has the answers. She just doesn't know which ones. She lifted the veil. The dark, dark skin of her face reflected the sun and the years. The deep paths under her eyes were running like old creeks. She wiped a finger under each eye. Her chest rose and fell.
Salt, she said. The truth may set us free, but it also binds us. I've tangled with truth before.
She patted her chest where the white dress covered her.
You have to be mighty careful how you unravel a mystery. You go pulling one thing, and we all feel a tug. We're all bound together. Do you want me to tell you the answer you already know? I did see Chanel the day before she was found, on the top stairs to her place, where that screen door hangs, and her daughter had wisteria in her arms.
Chapter 38. Another Victim. The children tumbled out of the school bus doors into the sunlight, stumbling into one another, doubling up in the doors, jumping and tripping over themselves in their excitement to be free. Salt watched from the porch of the McLeod house. Mary Marie was again the last off the bus. Mary eyed a group of girls stopped on the sidewalk in front of her, slapping their look-alike sneakers on the pavement, trying to make squeaking noises. She stayed back, didn't pass, but reached down to pull up white ankle socks that had been eaten by her brown loafers. At her vigil on the porch, Salt's legs gave way, and she sat down with a thud. Mary was so marked. She took a deep breath and entertained a brief fantasy of having Wonder herd all the children to include the girl. The sidewalk girls giggled and cast coy eyes outside their circle to see if anyone worth noticing was noticing them. They covered their mouths and elbowed one another, laughing at laughing. Mary hunched her shoulders to get past, on the edge of the sidewalk. They didn't seem to notice the black sheep, like Salt, a child who was kept separate, like the homes, cut apart from the city. As Mary passed, another girl with long, coltish legs and a short, pleated skirt parted from the group and started down the sidewalk almost beside Mary.
"What you know, anyway?"
The girl, grinning, called back to the others. Following behind, Mary matched her step for step, her socks slipping down again. Her focus was so intent on the girl that she almost passed by her own house, but pulled up when she noticed the police car. She glanced in the car, then looked up on her porch and saw Salt. She canted her head, then watched as the receding girl turned the corner, out of sight. Images of Wonder watching the new lambs, holding them gently with only his eyes, came to Salt again. He was tender while they were learning their legs. It didn't take much to make them skittish, to send them into an uncertain run, dangerously bolting. Salt wished she had a way for Mary to learn what to hurry toward and when to stay back.
"My grandmother told you not to come here again," Mary said, her face flat, her eyes hooded. She came up the steps. Her braided hair looked painfully tight, her clothes too clean for a 12-year-old who had just come home from being at school all day. The slipping socks were the only things out of place.
"Should we wait for her?" Mary swung the backpack from her shoulders and sat it down.
"Know what?"
She unzipped it and took out a large black 3-ring binder.
"I keep all my tests from the beginning of school till the end."
She balanced the open notebook in her left hand while flipping the dividers with her right.
"We worked on fractions today in math. I got all 10 problems right the first time. I always make 100s on my tests. I show my notebook to my grandmother every school day. You see? I make A's in English, social studies, and history."
She looked up from the notebook, looked down once more at her schoolwork, and closed the binder.
Salt stood beside her, her boots heavy on the wood planks. Mary handed Salt the notebook and left her pack where she'd dropped it.
"It doesn't matter, does it?" she said as she unlocked the front door.
The cheap socks were halfway gone into her shoes. Salt picked up the pack, tucked the binder under her arm, and went in behind Mary. Inside the door, the girl slipped off her shoes, straightened her socks, and watched Salt put the backpack and notebook down beside her loafers.
"You did it wrong. That doesn't go there. You better not knock my shoes against the wall."
She turned down the hall.
"Are your shoes off?"
Mary said over her shoulder. "Not this time," Salt said, mostly to herself. "I can't." The girl turned into her room to the left. The house was close and airlessly warm. When Salt came to the doorway, she found Mary standing in front of a dresser mirror, holding her arms wrapped around herself, shivering. The room was all white. Walls, bedspread, throw rugs, and a picture of a white Jesus hanging above the bed. Salt unloaded the books. As she placed the books on a white desk, Mary came over, patting them as you would a dog, and began to arrange them, weighing each book in her hands, then stacking them according to size.
"What you know anyway?"
Her voice sounded high up in her throat, a parody of the girls she'd left at the bus stop. With Salt following, she marched out down the hall and into the sterile kitchen that was filled with so much light it was hard to see through. "I know you were there that day, Mary. The flowers. I know your mother gave you the flowers like she always did." The girl went to the kitchen sink and grabbed the rim hard with both hands, holding on, the shivers turning into a tremble. "The wisteria was on the floor," Salt pushed on, matching Mary's stiffening muscles with her own body loosening to the point that she felt her bones disappearing. Mary bent over the sink and began to heave, but it was words she brought up.
"I asked her. It was Mother's Day the next day."
She turned, and there was a strand of spittle coming from one corner of her mouth.
"I asked her to let me come live with her, to be my mother."
She wiped her hand across her mouth and started to choke. Then her eyes widened suddenly and focused past Salt's shoulder. Salt turned. Mrs. McLeod was in the doorway.
"I told you, go past my door. You're not to be in my house."
She headed straight toward Mary.
"What you telling this cop?"
Her voice echoed.
"What have you been telling?"
The light from the window was brilliant, hitting the floor in a wavy shimmer. Mrs. McLeod came through the light at Salt, who put a hand up against the grandmother's chest to hold her back. In the halt, her finger struck and hit something hard beneath the old woman's dress, an old-fashioned corset. Mrs. McLeod startled at Salt's hand, drawing quick breaths into her hard chest. No one spoke. Her chest heaved against Salt's palm. Slapping at Salt's arm,
"Get out,"
she said. Salt didn't move, the feel of the old woman's corset still impressed on her fingertips. The house was very quiet. Salt still stood between the old woman and the girl. She directed her words to both, but facing Mrs. McLeod, she said, "Tell me the rest, Mary. You tried the first time I was here." Mary's words floated up.
"She'd picked those ugly purple flowers."
The afternoon sun struck through the kitchen windows, yellow bars pinning the three of them in place. Mary turned toward the window with her back to them.
"Wisteria's not real flowers. They're vines. They fall apart before I even get home. She give them to me because she don't even know what are real flowers. I feel ashamed of her, and mad at me because I was ashamed. I'm mad at me and her."
Mary sounded like a little girl.
"Her hair was all sticking up. I could see her head in places where she didn't have hair.
The grandmother pounded her fist against her hard chest.
Don't she have the right to remain silent?
Salt, fingers shaking, fumbled the Miranda card out of her pocket and recited mostly from memory, her voice like it belonged to someone else. You have the right? When she asked, Do you wish to speak to me at this time? The final question on the back of the card. Mary turned and looked straight at her grandmother, standing her distance, her voice loud, so distinct, like someone in the last seconds of a spelling bee, and said,
I will for me and my mother.
She wasn't no mother. She was a whore,
Mrs. McLeod growled. Mrs. McLeod, you have the right to remain silent. Mary turned to the sink and lifted her head to the window above it.
That's why she wouldn't let me come live with her. You made her believe what you said, that she was no good. She believed you, Nana. Why, she said no. She said, you know your Nana says this is no place for a child to be. Her arms were all snappy, and she was knocking things over, trying to find a jar for the flowers. All her head bopping. I wanted her to be still, to quit banging around.
Mary put her right hand over her eyes, blocking her view.
I won't hear this,
Mrs. McLeod said behind gritted teeth.
I can't be nobody's child ever, said Mary.
You don't know nothing.
Mrs. McLeod pointed a crooked finger at Salt, ignoring Mary Marie.
You ain't had to raise up your own self by taking care of everything and everybody else. I didn't have no mother.
The old woman took a step and planted herself firmly.
Chanel wasn't fit, and now Mary. And I just got myself. I wash my hands. Ain't no good in nothing. The sin just keeps passing on.
The radio crackled on Salt's shoulder. A unit was being dispatched on some children found home alone. She shifted under the weight of her gun belt and vest. It seemed that her armor had never weighed so much. Salt pressed on. What happened? Mary tucked her right hand under her arm and looked harder out the window.
I just left her. I left her.
She pushed away from the window. Her voice broke apart. Crying, she sank to the floor beside the sink. She put her hands over her face, muffling her words.
I had to go back on Mother's Day. The next day.
The grandmother stood rigid. Salt knelt next to the girl, flashlight banging against nightstick, keys clanking against handcuffs, radio transmitting, stiff in the bullet-resistant vest. I'm sorry, Mary, but I need you to tell me how your mother was shot.
Stop it, I told her.
Mary jerked her hand from her face and again coiled the fingers of her right hand.
Stop it. Then she dropped the glass with those stupid flowers and slipped on spilled water. Couldn't be still long enough for me to see her eyes.
Mary looked up from her squat on the floor.
There was a gun, and beside it on the counter was a bunch of rolled-up baby diapers. I wondered, was there a baby there? Was she keeping a baby and not me? She screamed crazy when I grabbed a diaper. A gun fell out. I pulled at all the diapers. They all had guns in them. Why guns? My mother's so scared of guns, she always goes after Big D with knives. I picked up one of the guns. She yelled, You gon' kill me. You gon' kill me. And she ran like she was scared of me. I went after her to tell her it was just the drugs making her think I would hurt her. But really, I did want to scare her, to make her stop. Scare her like she scared Big D with knives. I yelled, Where's the baby?
With a moan, the old woman dropped to one of the kitchen chairs. Salt, cross-legged on the floor, reached out to uncurl Mary's hidden fingers.
She was yelling, bumping into the wall. I found her in the closet, hiding. I felt sick and ashamed. She looked silly, pitiful. She couldn't do anything right. She was never going to be quiet and still and be my mother. She would always run away from me. I lifted the gun like a finger. It did make her be still. She was quiet. I could make her see me. I found you, Mama. Then her eyes came wide open on mine, and there wasn't any of my mama there, just something that took my mama. My finger pulled twice.
Salt was as still as Lot's wife until the girl put her hands on the floor to stand. They stood together. The grandmother kept her head turned away. Salt placed two fingers on the underside of Mary's wrist, as if taking her pulse, then keyed the radio mic. Radio, hold me out en route to homicide. And to Mary, you can come with me.
My mama wasn't there.
Salt walked out with her arm around Mary Marie. Salt stood by Mary in every step of the process. She held her hand while the girl made a transcribed statement to Wills at homicide. She rode with her in the back of the unmarked car while Wills drove to juvenile detention, and she stayed with her until she was taken to her cell. She'd probably never see the girl again. Department policy dictated law enforcement separation from arrestees prior to their trials. Salt and Wills did have friends at the district attorney's office who they'd call on to ask that Mary not be tried as an adult. But it would be years before Mary would be out of some kind of institution. Her last view of the girl was the back of her loosening braid.
Hey, homicide detective.
Wills was gently shaking her awake. They were in his unmarked, in the parking lot of the precinct.
You snore.
He laughed. I was dreaming, she said, her words heavy from sleep. She sat up. I fell asleep.
I know. Happens to me all the time when I've been involved in a case and I finally get the bad guy. They say you can always tell the guilty perps because they're the ones who fall asleep in the interview room. The hunter and the hunted, exhausted after the chase.
He turned toward her, propped his arm on the steering wheel.
I know you're tired, but give me the short version. What led you to Mary, to think she might have killed her mother?
Flowers. She inhaled, pushing up from her knees. But I kept hoping she'd only witnessed Chanel's death.
Flowers?
The wisteria in the photos, the fragrance beneath the stench of the apartment. Sister Connolly across the street said Chanel would pick flowers to give Mary. And then when we arrested Stone, he taunted Lil D by saying Mary had been at her mother's the day she was murdered.
Which meant Stone had been there, seen Mary, and that probably he'd gone in after Mary and gotten the guns.
Salt lowered her face to her hands. Sarah. Wills's hand was on her shoulder.
We'll do the best we can for Mary. Whatever help, therapy, treatment the state can provide.
Salt covered his hand with hers. Wills gently pushed her upright. She would have had a hard row to hoe, no matter. I think she stands a chance now.
Salt tried to stretch out her legs, her mouth sticky.
I am really tired. I must look like hell.
You solved my homicide. I wouldn't care if you looked like Gardner. I'd still want to kiss you.
He turned toward her. Oh, no. She put up her hand, covering her mouth.
First, if you're into kissing Gardner for solving your homicides, I'm not sure we're on the same page.
He laughed.
I kiss Gardner all the time. He doesn't take it personal.
You're ruining the image of homicide detectives.
Now she did grin. But second, my mouth feels like I've been licking sheep.
Well, that lets you off the hook,
Will said, moving as close to his door as he could, laughing. But not for long. It's high time for you and Wonder to meet Pansy and Violet.
She faced him. Over his shoulder, she could see the shift pulling in for the night, the line of cars forming for the next shift. When? She asked Wills.
When?
He repeated.
I'm making sure I heard you.
When? You've made your case. I watched the way you tried to soften everything for Mary.
Saturday, he said. Then leaned over and kissed her woolly mouth anyway.
Chapter 39 Homecoming. Salt watched from the front window as Wills's shiny truck, pulling a tail of red dust, turned off the highway into the drive. She looked around the living room at the sparse furniture. Plenty of breathing room. Wonder would have felt crowded otherwise. Fewer tables and chairs for him to skid into. She'd felt guilty that she'd enjoyed the absence of her mother and brother after they'd left. She'd come home from college, torn the boards off the windows and doors, moved back in, and put in her application at the PD. Like Mary Marie, she'd slipped and slid down the hall in her sock feet. She let the curtain fall, took a breath, walked to the back of the house and out to greet Wills. As she came out, Wills was parking under the great oak. The late afternoon sun was shining, and there was a definite hint of winter in the air. The windows of the truck were rolled up. Wills's voice was muted as he sang along with the radio and gathered bags from the seat. Salt stood at the driver's door, waiting with Wonder at her side. When Wills turned, window still up, his mouth opened in an O of exclamation. Recovering, he opened the door.
Startled me.
Maybe I ought to call you by something other than your last name, Wills. Salt reached in to help with the thermal bag.
How about handsome?
He shifted the bags.
Hello, dog.
Wonder came nudging and nuzzling his way under Wills's outstretched hand. He ruffled the dog's ears, sunshine warmth still on the dog's fur from a nap in the sun.
I hear lambs.
He turned toward the paddock and orchard.
How are the new sheep?
Why don't you come on in? Something smells good. She lifted one of the bags to her nose. Wonder followed, yelping and snapping, herding them on their way toward the back porch. A chill wind picked up and blew some of the bright yellow leaves from the pecan trees. Wonder stepped carefully beside them as they walked, keeping them together.
I still smell new paint.
He put his things on the kitchen table. She pulled the food from the bags. Cold ham, potato salad, cucumber. Where did you get these late tomatoes? She laid the dishes on the counter and began taking the covers off. The screen door rattled. The setting sun sent rays straight up off the horizon, so Mr. Gooden stood there in an orange aura.
Hello, hello, he called.
Why, Mr. Gooden?
I don't want to intrude, but I saw the truck pull in. I thought you could use some flowers.
He handed Salt a bouquet of lavender chrysanthemums and went over to shake hands with Wills.
Don't get up. I'm Wayne Gooden, from next door.
Bernard Wills. People just call me Wills.
The two men shook hands.
I'm proud of this girl.
Mr. Gooden reached his arm around Salt's shoulders. He was as tall as her father. They're beautiful. Thank you. She held the blooms close.
We're all proud of her, Wills said, but she keeps us on our toes.
I'm sure she tries not to worry you.
Mr. Gooden was headed for the door, smiling, winking at Salt, like they shared a private joke.
Good to meet you now. Have a good visit.
He was out the door, long legs halfway across the yard. The table was covered with half-empty plates and serving bowls. Bernard, she grinned.
Why did you move back here? Yes, I'm changing the subject. I'd never live it down if I was known as Bernard.
It's home. They were silent for a few minutes. The dog looked up. It was time, and time was passing.
I heard your dad was a good cop until he got sick.
She took a bite of Wills's cold ham. Her teeth sank in. The mustard in the potato salad was strong and good.
Are you sure your head's all right?
Salt swallowed and took a breath. I'm too nervous not to get this right out. Let me give you the tour. Wills held his hands out, palms up, ready. I need to tell you about my dad, so it won't be something hanging, some big secret or taboo thing. Come on, upstairs. She took his hand and led him down the hall. Twice a year, she gathered all the necessary cleaning supplies. She would carry a boombox to the far end of the upstairs hall. The music was always the same, always gospel, the Blind Boys of Alabama, the Staples Singers, blues gospel that transported her to the baptizing banks of a river. While she cleaned and washed the walls and floors of the scene of her nightmares, she sang along with the voices of sanctification and salvation. They stopped at the top of the stairs. The rooms are mostly bare. My mother took a lot of the furniture with her. Crystals from the small chandelier overhead cast tiny darts of yellow, pink, and green light along the walls and patched boards of the repaired floor. You all did good work. She opened each of the doors on the right. My old room. They peeked in from the doorway, then on to the sun porch. My escape hatch. And on to the guest room. And then to the closed door of her parents' bedroom. She put her hand on the brass knob, tarnished to black. When she was 10 years old, it had been level with her chest. She heard the familiar click as she turned the knob to the left. Wills covered her hand with his own and opened the door for her. The old flowered rug was the only thing left in the room. When Salt was Sarah and 5 years old, she had misheard Red Rover, Red Rover as Red Roses, Red Roses. Red Roses, Red Roses, let flowers grow over. She'd sing while she walked a secret path in the floral pattern on the rug, pretend it was an enchanted garden where her father was the king, and the language he spoke a magical one. Salt walked part of the secret path from the door of the room. I used to sit on the bed while he took off his uniform. He'd tell me funny stories about things that happened on the job. Standing at the windows on the other side of the room from the door, she turned to the closet. He kept his uniform cap and his gun on the top shelf. I think I tried to stay close to him with the job. Like it was just me and him. Our mission. More recently, she looked out to the orchard. I've come to realize that it's not the job. I have memories. Salt dreamed that she left her mother in the house and that she and her father walked arm in arm from the back porch, Wonder at their side. The sheep acknowledged their coming with baas or bleats, rustled a little, then settled back against one another in the paddock. The rising moon, a smooth yellow scimitar, was large against the trees, a nursery rhyme moon. A cow sat with her legs crossed over the crescent. They walked through the orchard, the first leaves off the trees crackling, oval nuts rolling under their feet. The branches and dry grasses gave up the sharp, peppery odor of sticky green pecan shells and sweet sheep dung.
"Smells different when the moon is out,"
her father said. "You've got a fine nose there, Pop."
"I've learned to appreciate what I've got left."
She drew apart from him, turned to face him, to find out what he meant. She could see nothing but two moons reflecting out of his blue, blind eyes. Salt turned away and looked off past the end of the tree line. Wender had run ahead to the edge of the field and was sitting, nose pointed up, silhouetted by moonlight. "I wish you could see him out there. He looks like the classic canine, wolf dog." She swallowed hard.
"It's almost enough to hear you describe him."
"Wonder's a great dog. I'm so sorry, Pop." She was trying very hard not to cry.
"Sorry?
Sarah, my head was cleared when I shot out the demons. I may be blind, but the clouds were blown away that day. Should have shot myself sooner." He smiled into the night. She tried to swallow, shivered, then took her father's arm again, this time leaning a little bit on him. He felt warm. She rubbed her cheek on his flannel shirt, and somewhere in her chest there was a small release. They walked on a little longer in the crisp night, with the moonlit dog keeping them company. Wonder, curled in a ball at the foot of her bed, moved his quivering ears back and forth. His eyes were open, but he, like she, stayed curled up. Since they were almost always past midnight going to bed, the sunrise felt a little early. They heard kitchen noises. Salt called the dog to her pillow. She thought he pretended to like his head on a pillow the way he saw hers. She opened one of his ears and whispered,
"Up."
The dog waved his ears, stood up on the bed, and shook out the night fur. Salt pulled on her jeans under her nightshirt and padded barefoot into the kitchen, letting the dog out the back door. Wills was standing at the sink, staring out the window. He had thrown an old quilt over his bare shoulders.
"Morning."
He opened his arms as she came to him. She tucked her head to his chest and breathed in his scent as he wrapped the quilt over her shoulders. She turned her back to him, and he encircled her in his arms and put his hands in her jeans pockets, pulling her close.
"Know what you get when you work your fingers to the bone?"
"What?" she said, knowing the answer to the old joke.
"Bony fingers."
She tugged at the quilt and went over to the glass front cabinet to get a cup. The day was already bright, trees in the orchard giving off their crisp fragrance, the leaf dust peppering the air. A jay screeched, and on the highway, an 18-wheeler changed gears. The muscles of her legs began to tense, and she wiped her hands on her jeans. The tick-tick of canine nails sounded at the porch door. Wills let Wonder into the kitchen, the dog making his sound like a low train whistle, woo, woo, a signal for someone to do something for him. He slid his head into Salt's lap. The grace of his simple affection made Salt's chest hurt. Blinking her eyes, she looked up to see the trim on the kitchen door, patched by her friends. She smelled Wills's ham on the counter, on a grass-green platter. She heard a solo baa from her surviving sheep, then a chorus of bleats from the four new members of the flock. The clouds outside reminded her of Pepper's pajamas, little salvations like the air around love. She drew in a long breath of it and put her hand on a frayed flowered square of the quilt Wills was wearing, her mother's quilt. "Let me show you the new lambs." Salt took Wills by the hand and pulled him up. the quilt sliding off his thick shoulders. "Come on," she repeated, feeling as eager as a kid. Wonder followed, and when he saw they were headed for the sheep, he ran past to the pen, eager to work, his snout inches from the ground, eyes unblinking, focused, his shoulders and head lowered. Salt led Wills to a section of the fence that was catching the first few rays of sun. The sheep protested Wonder's intensity and bunched into a corner of the paddock. She hated to disappoint the dog, but led him back to the porch anyway. He dropped to the floor when she closed the screen door. When she entered the pen, the sheep gathered around her. Even the new ones had become accustomed to her as their shepherd. She put her hands in the dirty white wool of the little dam that had survived stone slaughter and led her out to Wills. He reached out to the sheep. Salt reminded him, "All sheep stink." He bent down and moved his hands over the dam's knotty head. The normally placid little sheep stomped her hoof, let out a quick belch, then bent down to nibble at some weeds. "I've named her Red." Salt thought of her last glimpse of the lost woman, her thick hair the same color as red clay. "'Cause this sheep, she's usually covered with dust," she explained, vigorously patting the woolly flanks, sending up a halo of dust and the memory of a whistling whore. Wills touched the knobby head between the horn remnants. "Her head's like a rock, a hard head." He spread his fingers into Red's woolly neck. Red lifted her nose, sniffing. "Hello, Red." The sheep moved close to sample one of his shoelaces. "She does stink," agreed Wills, wrinkling his nose and pulling his foot from the sheep, but smiling and continuing to circle the sheep's head with his hands. Together, they fed and watered Red and the lambs. While they were spreading the grain and filling the water trough, the sun, full and bright, came round the house and covered them with something like warmth. Chapter 40. Turning the Corner. Salt and Pepper had been able to finish a complete 30-minute meal from clear broth to fortune cookies that neither had unwrapped. They talked about the new sheep, about Anne and the boys, and how they were doing in school. For once, radio had not interrupted to order them to calls.
"You gonna take the detective exam?"
Pepper got down to it. "Will says he'll pull for me to get to homicide, and he thinks because of the Chanel solve that I'll be a shoo-in. You?" He smiled, looking down.
"Yeah, it's time for both of us to do something career-wise. I'll probably get sent to narcotics if I make the cut. You know all us black guys get sent to drugs."
He shrugged, still smiling. "Pep, it'll be the first time in more than 10 years we won't be working together. It's kind of like we've been a couple and now we won't be." He stretched against the back of the booth, arms wide, and looked out at the room.
"Let's cross that bridge when it crumbles. It's not like we won't be spending time together. At least off-duty. Although, I see, happily, I might add, that Wills is taking up some of your time."
She openly grinned back at him. "Don't forget that I'm gutting half the upstairs at home for the dojo. You promised to bring the boys over, and we'll all work out together. They can hang with Wonder and the sheep, pick pecans, whatever. Anne says you can, so that seals it." She motioned for him to wipe a crumb from his chin. He took a swipe with his napkin then, reached out his hand to her, said,
"Deal."
But instead of doing the buddy handshake, he covered their clasped hands with his left hand.
"You've got to promise, though, that you'll always remember who's got your back."
"You do, Hot Pepper. You do." Embarrassed, they untangled their hands.
"Check!"
they simultaneously called to Mai. Standing in the parking lot at their cars, she brought up what she hadn't at the table. She wanted it said when Pepper didn't have time to argue. Help me watch out for Lil D, she said. He shook his head with frustration. Nothing big, Pep. Just if you see a chance. He needs to get his GED. Talk to him about a real job, something he'd want to do.
I guess I know where you're off to. I don't know why you're so determined on that kid. Just seems you set yourself up for disappointment. But we're in this together. You know all the guys will help somehow.
He gave a little salute, touching his fingers to her forehead instead of his own, and went back to his beat. As usual, Salt had the windows down, riding up the perimeter of her beat on Pryor. An almost cold wind worked with the last of the warm afternoon sun to keep her comfortable. She rode past Sam's, where the corner crowd was gathering. A couple of bright cars with oversized wheels were tuned to the same rap station and blasted in stereo across the parking lot. The girls had traded their summer shorts and skirts for tight pants and jackets, unzipped to reveal firm cleavage. They snapped colorful fingers to the beats coming from the broadcasting cars. The out-on-bail gang members, plus some young new recruits, were working the deals, rolling up to the cars, palming hits to the walk-ups, pausing only briefly as Salt slowly drove by, hand raised in an unreturned wave to the crew. She made a right, then right again, to get to her usual place where she could keep watch for him. She concealed the car two parallel alleys over, thumbed the car door locks, and began on the downward path toward the abandoned building.
You got company.
Man fell in beside her, a big smile on his handsome face. He pointed to himself, smile widening.
You gonna try to hold my hand?
She laughed.
Dispatch, hold me out on a suspicious person.
She gave radio her location and man's name and description. Her eyes all the while were steady on his face.
You don't trust me.
Man gave her a mock frown.
Yes, I do. I trust you to be you.
She put two fingers over her left shirt pocket and the phone there.
I didn't put that scar on your head. That was a white man shot you.
Children's voices came from somewhere close by, screeching, yelling, and laughing. He bought the gun from your boys. They got to the abandoned apartments where she generally kept watch on the gang. She turned instead and led Man toward the hill overlooking the corner. As they rounded the building, a gang of 7 or 8 grubby little boys scurried like feral cats from the broken windows and missing plyboard door of the building. One of the littlest caught his palm on a jagged piece of glass. She went over to help the kid, but all the boys, including him, dashed to a nearby scrubby magnolia tree, shoving each other to be the first up.
You checking on my boys across the street, or you meeting somebody here?
Man said cheerfully. Meeting you, she said. He stood a bit away, watching his drug corner. She touched the phone again. The little boys in the tree settled on a limb, swinging sneakered feet. There's always the possibility that Stone could turn. She faced him straight on.
He won't. Ever. He'd die of natural causes. I ain't been charged. There ain't no proof. Anyway, you say the man who shot you was buying guns from me. Even if that's true, you know he was buying for some other white man. Your side, I mean.
He bent down, picked up a rock, squatted, and threw it down the cracked, dry red clay hill. They both watched it kick up loose pebbles and dirt. I'm not going to argue blame. There's enough of that for everybody. The boys in the tree hung close enough to be able to hear. She sensed that she and Man had their attention.
So what's changed, Officer Salt?
He turned his head and smiled at her.
I'm doing my job. Lil D and the boys still doing theirs. And you just passing through.
We're all passing through, Man.
Yeah? So what's different?
Some of us are changed.
Who else?
Man stood up and dusted off his brand new baggy jeans.
Like I told you before, don't nobody give a shit about this place. This city, people don't care about no homes.
He left her, walking off down the hill.
You ain't even made no dent of a difference in this place, he said,
not looking back, even to wave goodbye. She hummed a few notes of a gospel tune and turned her attention to the boys in the magnolia and hummed a little louder, loud enough so the tree boys looked down, put their hands over uncertain grins, poking at one another for what to think about a cop standing on a ruddy hill in the projects, humming a church song. The children dropped to the ground like ripe fruit. Laughing, they ran up the hill in the opposite direction from the corner below. She hummed the chorus again. The phone buzzed in her shirt pocket. Man was walking toward his gang. She pressed the phone close to her ear.
That Merrill guy that you looking for on that robbery?
Yeah, she answered, recognizing the reliable informant.
He on Thurkill across from Sam's right now. He scrapped, he said,
alerting her in the vernacular that Merrill was armed. D, was all she got out before the connection was gone. Salt closed the phone. Be careful, she prayed for them both. This is Allison Ryan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Policeman's Daughter by Trudy Nan Boyce. This program was directed by Christina Rooney. Executive producer Karen Jakonski. Text copyright 2018 by Trudy Nan Boyce. Production copyright 2018 Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.